that he would prefer to get to net zero emissions by 2050. Former Nationals leader Barnaby Joyce going so far as to say he would cross the floor on the issue. From Canberra, Amanda Kopp reports.
While Prime Minister Scott Morrison decides whether to commit to a net zero emissions target by 2050, there are tensions within the coalition ranks. Nationals Senator Bridget McKenzie has told ABC's RN that she can't support a net zero emissions target because there isn't a plan yet for what happens to regional industries.
The stakes for our communities and our industries and their future sustainability and prosperity, Fran, is just too high.
She says agriculture and farmers can't be worse off under any carbon reduction scheme. Amanda Kopp, National Radio News, Canberra.
Authorities in Victoria have now confirmed the hotel quarantine worker who contracted coronavirus on Sunday has the more infectious UK variant of the disease. The new development raises concerns about who else has been exposed to the illness. Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews says the worker's household contacts have been tested and are isolating. He says more than 100 people, including 21 Australian Defence Force members and police officers, have been identified as close contacts of the infected worker.
Similarly, they're all isolating. They'll get tested, and as soon as we're in a position to update you on those results, we will.
Foreign Minister Maurice Payne has denied interfering in the case of an Australian journalist jailed in China. Cheng Lei has been formally arrested after more than 6 months in detention, accused of illegally supplying state secrets overseas. China has warned Australia not to interfere in the case, saying its investigation is being carried out in accordance with the law. Senator Payne told the ABC she would not speculate on why Ms. Cheng had been arrested, but that Australia would always stand up for the interests of its citizens.
She deserves the basic standards of justice that doesn't constitute interference with the Chinese legal system. But of course, we respect the Chinese legal system as we do legal systems in other countries.
A tropical low near Western Australia's border with the Northern Territory has prompted a severe weather warning for the state's northeast, with the potential for flash flooding from heavy rain. The Bureau of Meteorology says the low is tracking slowly west and bearing down on locations including Halls Creek, Kununurra, Lake Argyle and Warman. The latest warnings follow the once-in-a-decade flood in WA's Midwest and Gascoyne regions over the weekend. The Gascoyne River peaked at more than 7 metres near Carnarvon, and efforts are continuing to assess the damage. And all eyes will be on local wildcard Madison Inglis as she goes up against defending champion Sophia Kennan during her tough opening Australian Open clash. Last year, Kennan ended world number one Ash Barty's run in the semi-finals. However, the American has admitted she's nervous to defend her crown after crashing out of her warm-up tournament in a loss to Garbiñe Muguruza. Barty's campaign also gets underway tonight with a first-round match against Montenegrin Danka Kovanić.
National Radio News is supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation, cbf.org.au.
A diverse
alternative. All right, welcome back to News from the Drug War Front with Jeff and Marin in the studios at 2XX Community Radio, 98.3 FM. And I've just finished the piece that was speaking about
prison drug treatment in prisons in New South Wales.
Use of injectable buprenorphine.
Yep.
Drug courts. Specialist drug courts which operate in Victoria, New South Wales, South Australia, Queensland and WA, which can order drug-dependent offenders to undergo 2 years of drug treatment rather than imprisonment, as well as drug diversion programs in which people caught possessing a small amount of drugs are cautioned or sent for treatment rather than being charged, have shown some success in reducing reoffending, but they deal with only a small percentage of offenders. By and large, the New South Wales prison population is made up of people who have serious issues with substance abuse. Impact of imprisonment. This is the last paragraph. It's also no secret that illicit drugs and alcohol are costly behind bars if they can be obtained, which means that people with dependency will often find themselves in debt and or unable to find gainful employment upon release as a result of their criminal records. Mm. Even if programs such as Justice Health and Forensic Mental Health Network's opioid Agonist Treatment, or OAT, does have some success in helping inmates to manage their opioid addiction, there's a reasonable chance that in an environment surrounded by users, not all of whom can be treated by the program, they will end up dependent on something else, perpetuating the never-ending cycle of dependency and crime, turning the justice system into a revolving door.
Which indeed it is anyway, Jeffrey. It's just a different kind of revolving door. It becomes a different kind of revolving door. So, yeah, it's the content of this article is at the end of it. Is intended to provide a general guide to the subject matter. Specialist advice should be sought about your specific circumstances, which I think is a fair enough proviso at the end of that article. But it's a really interesting one, and I think it's something that needs to be thought about in depth. If you think about Victoria saying they haven't got enough treatment beds, I wonder what their prison system looks like in terms of drug and alcohol use. ACT has the same kind of problem. We know that Queensland has the same sort of issues going on. It doesn't matter where you are. Prison is a hell of a place to be. And people will use drugs if they can get access to them. And people will find a way to get access to them because they don't want to be there. They don't want to feel the way they do. They want to get out of that headspace, which is bang of the prison door type
four walls,
attitude, four walls and no control, no power, the minimal connection that you have with your family, and they tell you something that you cannot manage from within a prison cell. People don't understand that. Your family will still ring you up and say, we have an issue, and all you can do is sit for 24 hours till the next phone call and wonder what the hell's going on.
Yeah, I agree.
No control over anything outside of the fact that you breathe, you eat, you go to the toilet, you shower if you feel so inclined, but that's it.
Yeah.
That's your control.
Thought I might play a song in relation to incarceration. It's by the American rapper Ice-T, and it's called The Tower. This is Ice-T.
That sounds like Florida.
In a big gray bus, and I'm shackled down myself. That's who I trust. The minute I arrived, some sucker got hit, shanked 10 times behind some bullshit. Word in the pen, the fool was a snitch. So without hesitating, I made a weapon quick. Found a sharp piece of metal, taped it to a stick. Then the bullhorn sounds, that means it's time for chow. My first prison meal, the whole feeling was foul. It wasn't quite my style, but my stomach growled. So I washed the shit down and hit the weight pile. The brothers were swole, the attitudes was cold. I felt the tension on the yard from the young and the old. But I'm a warrior, I got my ground to hold. So I studied the inmates to see who had the power. The whites, the blacks, or just the gun tower.
Yo, man, I was up in Jamestown, man, on the dorm 8, man, on the weight pile, man. And these two fools was fighting white boys, man. White boy put his arm through the window, man, the back was like hanging out, man. The CEO didn't even want to touch it, man. It's like blood everywhere. But I think they came and stick that boy up his commissary, man. It was real bad, man. It was real crazy up there, man. It was wild.
In the blink of an eye, a riot broke out. Blacks put their backs to the wall because it was north and south. A gunman shouts and everybody had doubts till the bullets started flying, took two men out. Then they rushed everybody back to their cells. Damn, the pen is different from the county jail. I'm in a one-man cell. I know my life's on the scale. I wonder if that gunman is going to hell. This is my second day. I got a 10-year stay. I learned my first lesson in the pen, you don't play. I seen a brother kill another because they said he was gay. But that's the way it is. It's been that way for years. When his body hit the ground, I heard a couple of cheers. It kind of hurt me inside. They were glad he died. And I asked myself just who had the power. The whites, the blacks, or just the gun tower.
Soledad, X-Wing. My first day off of RTQ. As I passed through the Melody, Texas, I could feel the attitude so thick I could touch it. The manpower was all around. I could definitely see that. Before I knew it, three stickers that went down. Yep, you guessed it. Lockdown.
You see, the whites got a thing they call white pride. The blacks got the muscle, Mexicans got the knives. You better be wise, you wanna stay alive. Go toe-to-toe with a sucker, no matter what size. A fool tried to sweat me, acting like it was hard. I stuck him twice in the neck and left him dead on the yard. It was smooth how I did it, cause nobody could see. With my jacket on my arm and my knife on the side of me, bam, bam, it was over, another fool bites the dust. I went crazy in the pen with nobody to trust.
I'm benching 10 quarters so I'm hard to sweat. Use a tack gun and engrave my set. They call me a lifer cause I'm good as dead. I live in the hole so the floor is my bed. And I ask myself again, who has the power? The whites, the blacks, or just the gun tower?
I am a J2 overflow. Back of Bill, you know, Charles Manson. Undertale killer, you know, on the main line. You know what I'm saying? And white boys getting stuck on a regular. Getting their commissary took, you know what I'm saying? Then I go from there to Susie's World. You know, I made me some steel. You know what I'm saying? Had to get busy with it. You know what I'm saying? Had to get busy. You know, got went to the hole, laid there, and I had to find myself. You know what I'm saying? When I was able to get back to the main line, you know what I'm saying? Was drama once again. You know, they weren't ready to move on me. Ready to roll me up off the yard, you know? But my guys was with me. You know what I'm saying? John Nell, Nelsy, you know what I'm saying? OGs was down on my line. You know what I'm saying? Ready to get busy, put their life on the line and stick something for me. Then they rolled us up, you know, put us back in a solitary, moved us from there to the other yard, where it was more drama. And the warning shot was a hit.
Oh, Jeffrey.
How's that for a bit of chilling?
Oh, absolutely. We think we've got it tough here, boys and girls. Don't know nothing.
Try maximum security federal
the
U.S.
Whole,
prison.
Absolutely. Yeah. What a shocker.
Got over 2 million Americans incarcerated, you know, land of the free, home of the brave.
That's double the number that they've, oh, no, it's 4 times the number that have died from COVID.
From COVID, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. It's, wow.
Pretty chilling,
that
yeah.
That is amazing, yep.
All right, you're back with Jeff and Marion. This is news from the Drug War Front on 2XX Community Radio, 98.3 FM, and it's 12 minutes past 11. Going to cover the story. It's a bit of a lengthy one, but it's interesting given the debate about the use of things like ecstasy or psilocybin to treat people with post-traumatic stress disorder and the chance for, you know, that being a breakthrough for people.
Yes, they've certainly talked about it and been talking about it on and off for years, but coming back to into public debate. And if there's anything that we are in favour of, Jeffrey, isn't it, it's at least having a public debate of some kind or another about all of them, about drug use per se, you know, not just the legal and illegal status of it, but, you know, the fact that it really is as much a moral argument as it is a legal or a functional argument. It's about how do you feel about it. But having the debate, talking about it is what's important. And I think that was part of the issue about the discussion you were talking about on the other radio station yesterday, was having the public debate is so important.
It's
so
crucial.
Yeah, this is part and parcel of it, I think.
And why is drugs exempt from being able to be discussed? That's what I find
extraordinary. And why are drug maintenance, you know, why are they not on the concessional PBS safety net? That why can we not get methadone included into the safety net? Why does the fact that you have to pay for your methadone every day, which is not an issue in the main, but the fact that it's not included, if you're on a lot of medication, and many drug users are on just as many kinds of other kinds of medications for managing their health as the straight public are, so-called straight public are, how come that methadone cannot be called part of the public's health services, the concessional scripts?
Absolutely. And I noticed that the Harm Reduction Australia put out a press release saying that the Pharmacy Guild actually supports including methadone and buprenorphine scripts into the safety net arrangements on the PBS.
I'm interested that the Pharmacy Guild says that, but it makes sense that it would. It, you know, that's actually quite a substantial source of income for many pharmacies.
Yes.
And to have that included into this in the safety net would just make sense for them.
Well, what's the rationale for excluding it? That's what I'm wondering.
Well, it sounds a pretty hypocritical kind of approach, doesn't it, if we're seeing it as a health treatment, Jeffrey, or as a treatment service of any kind, then why is it not included?
Yeah.
Anyway. Maybe like chronic pain management of any kind, it comes under that heading. And in that case, we're back to the moral argument.
Yeah.
Is it, you know, is it okay to let somebody be in chronic pain or not? And if people are taking drugs to relieve their chronic pain, should they be so-called
rewarded for it?
Should they get any help for it?
To me, it's a pretty appalling approach.
Yeah, well, we would see that as being an, you know, there'd be a standard outcome. We would say, no, obviously include that on the list. I mean, what's to be excluded from the list anyway? It's just something that doesn't affect the family of the Prime Minister at the time. Is that what it is?
You know?
Or is it that what God said last time he asked?
Or is it just the way that's been done all the time? So
Is that the point? Don't have to change it. Really, all you have to do is amend a bit of legislation. Yeah, you don't have to make it, get rid of it completely. You just have to amend it, Geoffrey. Well,
especially as they've made some changes and lowered the threshold.
Yeah, already making changes, so why not just include it, put it on the list?
It's not difficult. All right, look, we'll tuck into this article by Stephen Bright and Martin Williams, published at The Conversation. Will Australia legalise ecstasy and magic mushrooms to treat mental illness? Here's why it's still too soon. So they're arguing,
it takes some more time.
While the public focus remains on COVID vaccines, the Therapeutic Goods Administration, or TGA, continues to evaluate a range of proposals around the provision of medical treatments in Australia. The regulatory body is currently considering whether psychiatrists should be allowed to prescribe MDMA, that's ecstasy, and psilocybin to treat mental illness.
Yeah, that comes through, that's the magic mushrooms, that's the active ingredient, psilocybin in magic mushrooms.
Indeed. The TGA will announce the interim decision February 3 and make a final ruling on April the 22nd. Psychedelic drugs for the treatment of mental illness represent a very promising area, and any new treatment which could help people suffering, particularly in the wake of the pandemic, should seem like a good thing. But until Australia engages in further research into the therapeutic potential of these drugs, we believe it's too soon to make them available as medicines.
I actually think there should be another thing. But until Australia engages in further research and takes notice of the results.
Well, that,
that just seems to me to be fundamentally... Yeah, that's left out of that sentence, and I ought to think it ought to be in there.
Well, there's lots of evidence on a whole range of issues which
that
gets ignored.
Absolutely ignoring flat out. Okay, the application. Increasing research evidence suggests that MDMA, commonly known as ecstasy, could be an effective adjunct to psychotherapy for people with post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. Meanwhile, clinical trials of psilocybin, the psychoactive component of magic mushrooms, show it could assist psychotherapy in the treatment of anxiety and depression, addiction, and a range of other mood disorders. On this basis, in July 2020, an organisation called Mind Medicine Australia made an application to the TGA requesting that MDMA and psilocybin be classified as Schedule 8 controlled medicines, because at the moment they are just not included under Schedule 9. As prohibited drugs, just flat out prohibited. Other examples of Schedule 9 drugs include heroin and methamphetamine. As Schedule 8 controlled medicines, MDMA and psilocybin would sit alongside drugs like dexamphetamine, morphine, and some forms of medical cannabis. Some of these and other Schedule 8 drugs, such as ketamine and cocaine, are used recreationally. If the TGA reclassifies MDMA and psilocybin, Australia would be the first country in the world to recognise these drugs as legitimate medicines. That doesn't mean it's wrong,
no,
Geoffrey. It just means that we'd be first.
Well, we were out in front in the response to HIV.
Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with being first in a lot of ways. And yes, certainly with HIV, we were way out in front, and look what happened.
Look, the brilliant results,
The infection rate in injecting drug users with only that as their risk factor was minimal, really. The effect was very minimal. Sure, a couple of people did die from it, and I do not discount that that had that effect, but in fact, needle sharing, unsafe injecting practices were hit pretty much on the head by the ability for us to do peer education and get the message out to drug users, don't share.
And access new equipment.
Yep, and how to access. Not only did we talk about the behavioural changes, but we had the strategies and the methods in place to support people in making those behaviour changes. So it was a really perfect model of health education, rather than sickness education, which is what we've done more often than not.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Okay, is Australia ready? Early research suggesting psychedelics had therapeutic potential lapsed after 1971, when the drugs were made illegal around the world. But it resumed early in the 2000s, manifesting an international renaissance in psychedelic science. Australia was a little later to get involved than some countries, but in the past 18 months, we have succeeded in initiating clinical research locally. Edith Cowan University, Monash University, University of Melbourne, and St Vincent's Hospitals in Melbourne and Sydney all have research on psychedelic-assisted therapies, either in the pipeline or already underway. The trial at St Vincent's Hospital in Melbourne is the first to have started recruiting participants. These trials aim to contribute to the research happening globally and to demonstrate that Australia has the regulatory processes, people and infrastructure to provide these treatments safely and effectively.
Mm. But we're not there yet, it goes on. There are three key reasons why Australia is not yet ready for MDMA and psilocybin to be rescheduled as medicines by the TGA. One, no accredited training. Australia has very few healthcare professionals trained to provide psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy. I would suggest we've probably got none to be legitimately registered as psychedelic-assisted psychotherapists. These drugs produce powerful changes in consciousness that could lead to psychological harm rather than healing when given to unsuitable patients or by healthcare workers without the necessary training. Two, prohibitive costs. Medical cannabis or medicinal cannabis is only legally available in pharmaceutical formulations. The actual plant is not available as a medicine. This makes medicinal cannabis expensive. Only 3.9% of Australians using cannabis for medical reasons access it legally. We expect pharmaceutical-grade MDMA and psilocybin will also be expensive to access. Three, going underground. Like medical cannabis, we're concerned that lack of access and prohibitive costs will mean more people will access existing unregulated MDMA and psilocybin treatment services. This puts people at risk since there's no quality control of either drugs or the therapists. Well, illicit drugs, Jeffrey, is just part of our argument that illicit drugs will always be an unregulated market,
yeah,
which will lead to high prices, which leads to not clean drugs,
yeah,
et cetera.
Yeah.
Should these issues arise, it goes on, our efforts over recent years to finally establish psychedelic medicine in Australia could be undone. What will the TGA decide? The article goes on. Given these concerns, we believe it's highly unlikely the TGA will decide to reschedule MDMA and psilocybin as medicines at this stage. I don't think it's only those three arguments. I think then first cab off the rank would probably operate against it as well. And while emerging evidence is continuing to suggest these drugs can be effective adjuncts to psychotherapy, we believe the application was made without sufficient regard to the universally accepted process of new drug approval. We need to see phase three clinical trials completed before any informed decisions can be made. The trials in Australia have not yet reached phase three. They haven't with some of the for the AstraZeneca
overseas
either. So,
yeah, well, that's true.
I mean,
yeah,
they're kind of pushing it there.
Yeah.
It depends on what you consider an urgent issue.
Requirement, yeah.
Yep. This approval process is important so we know the drugs are effective and safe, including understanding any side effects. By way of comparison, we know Pfizer wouldn't apply for TGA approval for a new antidepressant before completing phase three research. Even the COVID-19 vaccines, Pfizer, AstraZeneca and Moderna, are fast-tracking internationally, have been required to complete stringent, widely scrutinised phase three trials.
Okay.
Where to from here? Sorry?
Where to from here? Current and future Australian research in this space will offer a crucial pathway for therapists to learn how to provide psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy. This is an important step before Australia is ready for MDMA and psilocybin to be approved as medicines. Moving forward, we anticipate Australian healthcare professional registration boards will come to acknowledge psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy as a specialty area of training and will need to develop accredited training programs to meet the demand for appropriately qualified therapists. Notably, none of the current research into psychedelic-assisted treatments for mental illness in Australia is receiving government funding. That's interesting. Not surprised, but
no.
Government support will be important to extend this research beyond early phase trials and ultimately will be crucial for the widespread rollout of treatment. Finally, to ensure equitable access, psychedelic-assisted therapies will need to be embedded within the public healthcare system and supported by the PBS. Our submission to the TGA, along with others, will be made public on February the 3rd. I'll have to see what they've said when the TGA announces the interim decision. So, interesting. I mean, I think you're right, Marion. Just the fact that we'd be the first to actually regulate is not a reason not to.
It's interesting that there are a few comments that we might have a quick look at after that too. I mean, the first one by Greg Key says, the three reasons you have provided are not reasons to keep these substances from being TGA approved. I would argue the three points you've listed are actually caused by prohibition. And that was really my first reaction to that was that, you know, you're looking at things from a, it's illegal, so therefore we can't do it. So let's go to phase three trials. But while you keep the drugs illegal, you can't actually do anything but have impure drugs. It isn't stopping people from using the drugs. We've actually been talking for some time, done quite a few articles on microdosing. People have been self-medicating.
That's right.
As they do all the time. But when we're talking about capital A anecdotal statements that go to research, they do not respect that information
that evidence,
because it's not a standardised controlled
double
research
blind,
trial.
Randomised, controlled.
And that's a real problem, that we have no respect for anecdotal evidence, which means that what you feel and what I feel has no relevance. It has no bearing on decisions that people made and people make or government makes. And yet peer education is such a valuable, and the acquisition of information through peers, finding out what's happening in the community is really important in designing programs to keep users healthy, to keep them and their families healthy, and to keep the community healthy and alert and awake and alive and accessible, to keep their ears accessible to the messages that government wants to give them via us. So in a lot of ways, we become messengers, for good or for ill. So messengers to government on behalf of peers, but also messengers to peers on behalf of government. And in a lot of ways, I feel sometimes hypocritical.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm doing the wrong thing, but I'm in a spot where I can say what needs to be said and who makes that decision.
The other thing I think the authors don't recognise is the lost decades for this research to take place because of prohibition.
The last 60 years, for
instance. We could have had all sorts of phase three trials or whatever standard they are arguing for.
And Geoffrey, when I was doing my psych nursing, they were already doing trials of some kind of the use of hallucinogenics in particularly psychotic, when people are having psychotic episodes, and that you could actually induce a psychotic. That was what hallucinogenic drugs, the effect of hallucinogenic drugs was like. It was, in effect, a psychotic episode, but a controlled psychotic episode.
Yeah.
And if you had somebody to guide you through that, which is what people do when they go tripping, they take a guide, But they have done that back in 1972, 73, 74, 75, as I'm calling it anti-psychiatry, and then goes on, you know, further years down the track, and people are microdosing to keep their stress and their anxiety levels down and finding that it works for them. So people use their drugs, whether they're approved by TGA or not, whether they've had Schedule 3 trials or not, people do it.
Exactly.
So, let's face some facts here and not just say, you know, we can't do that because
we haven't
done the Schedule 3 trials. Sorry, honey, they're doing
it's a bit limiting,
All
right, let's go to a song. I thought I'd play
a
track
idea
from Everlast. It's called What It's Like. This is Everlast.
Mind know what it's like to sing. later he say he won't date or return a call. And swear goddamn if find that man cutting off his balls. And then she heads for the clinic and she gets some static walking through the door. They call her a killer and they call her a sinner and they call her a whore.
All right, that was Everlast and What It's Like. It's coming up about 27 minutes to 12. You're with Jeff and Marion. This is news from the Drug War Front.
On Community Radio 2XX 98.3 FM.
People Powered Radio.
That's us.
Okay, look, this international story, it's about a country. I don't think we've ever done a story about Slovenia. I actually went to Slovenia as a teenager.
Oh, did you?
Went to Ljubljana. Yeah, and
we talked about the dark web in Russia, but we didn't talk about Slovenia, which actually was connected to some of that stuff we talked about last week. Go on, tell me about Slovenia.
It's used to be part of Yugoslavia, was one of the republics before Yugoslavia disintegrated and became separate countries.
Yeah.
Serbia,
Croatia, and so on. Yeah,
Bosnia,
was that Czechoslovakia,
Montenegro, but also Slovenia. But this story, the fellow who. He's basically the president of the harm reduction group that is now no longer. But you just bear in mind that the impact of prohibition happens to varying degrees, but all over the
world, everywhere,
in little countries like Slovenia. So this is entitled Authorities in Ljubljana, that's the capital of Slovenia, destroy community hub housing harm reduction initiative by Juan Fernandez Ochoa, talkingdrugs.org, January the 26th. First came the police, then the bulldozers. The ruins of the autonomous factory ROG speak volumes of the progressively increasing ease with which Slovenian authorities are deploying violence to curtail rights and freedoms. Mm. Amidst the ruins lie the office space of Društvo Areal, the only community-led harm reduction initiative in the entire country. of Slovenia.
Yeah.
Its president, Janko Bellin, shares the news with a sense of urgency and determination. Quote, it's not just us being attacked, but a collective. We will defend our civil society in full capacity. As Janko says, the autonomous factory ROG was a 15-year cooperative effort at the service of the neighbourhood, the community and other rise people pushed to the margins by intersecting forms of oppression. The rise of ROG. Originally a bicycle factory in the city centre of Ljubljana, the building was abandoned and remained in a state of dereliction for over a decade. In 2006, neighbours, activists and artists reclaimed the space to serve as a multifunctional, self-run space for political organising, cultural manifestations, sports and the provision of services to groups facing marginalisation. 5 years ago, the municipality of Ljubljana decided that the space should be demolished to build a new facility. The original plans, which included a design hotel, appear to have given way to a hub, quote, for creators, citizens, organisations and companies. Crucially, these plans excluded ROG's current users. In fact, as part of these gentrification plans, the municipality sought to evict the very collectives that had nurtured the space back into functionality. In September 2019, a decision by Slovenia's Supreme Court brought a sliver of hope to ROG. While acknowledging the municipality's ownership of the space, the court rejected the eviction claim. According to the decision, ROG was akin to, quote, a public good, open to the people of the city. As such, its users were not an evictable legal entity, but rather an ever-evolving social formation. Throughout the proceedings, the organisations and collectives that are part of ROG's vibrant life called on local authorities to open spaces for meaningful participation, dialogue and consensus building to no avail. Mm. Instead, they got bulldozers.
Oh. And its downfall, the article goes on. On the 19th of January 2021, the Slovenian police, acting at the behest of the municipality of Ljubljana, arrived at ROG's site to evict its occupants and destroy it. In Janko's own words, there was no warrant, quote, no warrant, no eviction papers, nothing official, just brute force, end quote. Some occupants and supporters had gotten wind that authorities were planning to target self-managed cultural and civic spaces in the city. Some of them rushed to both ROG and the Metelkova Art Centre. The small crowd that tried to protect the site was met with violence. According to some of the people present, the police pushed and shoved, arrested and tear-gassed demonstrators. Within hours, the building lay encircled. Bulldozers quickly stepped in to summarily destroy the building. 15 years of popular mobilisation, creativity and solidarity crushed to ruins.
How soul-destroying that must have been.
Absolutely. 15 years, you can just imagine that somebody that was there, say, from their mid-teens to to being 30, suddenly saw their artwork, their political mobilisation, you know, their connection, their community networking, demolished into a heap. And the picture is actually quite soul-destroying.
Yeah, it's depressing.
You know, from a building with trees around it to a big hole.
Yeah.
It's just soul-destroying, isn't it? An attack on harm reduction, it goes on. Harm reduction, it goes on. Janko has experienced something similar before. From 2004 to 2008, Društvo Ariel rang the Balkans' first homeless shelter and overdose prevention site, that's Ernest, for people who use drugs. After years of service, the site was destroyed by the police and Janko was sent to prison. Oh dear. He was later absolved and provided financial compensation, but, as he puts it, quote, money didn't bring our shelter back. For the last two decades, Društvo Ariel, that's a dreadful word, Jeffrey, I don't know what that accent over the top of the S means.
I'm not sure what the language
has said. Been steadfast in supporting the health and welfare of people who use drugs, including as part of the Support Don't Punish campaign, which listeners might remember we've referred to frequently, because Karma was a big part of that. We did a big 16 days of action thanks to Natasha's organisation. But so, and there's a big report on it too that listeners might like to get hold of, and they can through Karma. The organisation provides a valuable lifeline to people who use drugs in situations of great vulnerability, including migrants in need. The organisation's DBM project, for instance, works mostly with migrants and refugees. The project has pioneered the documentation of this population's drug use-related needs, as well as their experience in navigating obstacles in accessing health services in Slovenia. Following ROJ's demolition, Druspo Ariel requested that public authorities recover and reinstitute the securely locked down confidential documentation from the DBM project. Other materials may be impossible to retrieve. Valuable and scarce harm reduction materials seems to have been lost. Dear. This includes campaigning materials, sterile injecting equipment, food donations and samples of naloxone, a life-saving medication that reverses opioid overdose, which, our listeners would know. That's dreadful, Jeffrey.
Wrong.
The European Union's Drug Agency and its 2021-2025 drug strategy underscore the crucial importance of empowering people who use drugs to protect each other, provision of naloxone and accessibility of services. Drug-related deaths in Slovenia have been growing steadily since 2014. According to the latest European drug report in 2020, the country's drug-induced death rate, that's in quotes, is 41 per million, significantly above the EU's average at 23.7 per million. In this light, the destruction of ROG and Drustvo's Ariel's headquarters and materials during one of the worst health crises that the world has seen in years, that's the pandemic, can be clearly understood as an intolerable aggression on harm reduction itself.
It's scarcely believable, isn't it, really?
It's horrible.
How important it was. And there's the picture that Marion mentioned of the before and after, which, of course, you can't see.
Can you put this article on the web, Jeffrey, do you think?
I will, so people can see the photo.
Because it's just devastating to see that it's gone. It's just lost, just wiped out. And it just looks so cute, you know, with just the trees around it.
Looks like a really vibrant community space.
Looks like a great centre, with people out the front and, And it's a good article to read anyway. It's really important and really, people need to know how important harm reduction is around the world and how difficult it is to get access to harm reduction initiatives in many countries around the world.
Exactly.
And this is one case in point.
It gives a bit of context about the government's perspective, and it says the government of the Prime Minister, Janez Janša, brought into power on a platform of xenophobia, Islamophobia, nationalism, has increasingly undermined rights and freedoms. His virulent rhetoric, peppered by conspiracy theories and attacks on the press, the judiciary, academics and, quote, communists, places him comfortably next to the right-wing authoritarians mushrooming across Australia, the Americas and beyond. And it talked about a 22nd of January demonstration in solidarity with ROG being interrupted and a number of participants arrested. And the reason was that it was a COVID-related curfew. Final thoughts. The destruction of ROG is a disaster for the countless people that found support and a sense of community at the site. It should also be a warning sign about the destructive impact of the unholy alliance between neoliberal and authoritarian forces and their convergent agendas of gentrification and exclusion. For human rights bodies, European agencies and organisations invested in human rights and harm reduction, it is a call to action. The destruction of ROG cannot be in vain. And Juan Fernandez Ochoa is the Campaigns and Communications Officer at the International Drug Policy Consortium, or IDPC.
Where's that based, Jeffrey? You think that's in Europe, somewhere. Be in Slovenia? I mean, would he be in Slovenia, physically based in Slovenia now?
Well, Janko was, but I'm not sure the author is. I don't think the IDPC is based in Slovenia. But
I'm just wondering whether it's a project of the IDPC. Campaign and communications.
I think he's obviously been involved in trying to respond to
what happened.
But the damage is done. It's been bulldozed.
And when you think about it, they've demolished the naloxone supplies that they had. They've demolished the needle and syringe exchange stuff that they had. The files, the information, the computers, the hardware, the software. The hub itself as a meeting place, I suspect there's probably a certain amount of political activity that they were trying to smash as well or get rid of in its totality. And if you demolish someone's home space, you demolish their heart, yes? You go right to the heart. It just gets rid of it completely. But you know what? People can move. They can find another place to be. Why not build a place next to the police station or next to where they keep the bulldozers, yeah? But, I mean, it's gobsmacking to think that they were able to do that. But, God, the Capitol Theatre in Manuka was demolished overnight, Jeffrey, without reference to anybody. Yeah, so, and that was a... That was a space that was actually, it was, I know that it was held for it, the importance, and it was developed as a very good example of early Canberra architecture, like the North, the Melbourne and Sydney buildings. So, you know,
yeah, the same sort of mentality.
Places have heart, that kind of mentality, demolition of the Canberra. Yeah, hospital, same thing, but, you know, just deadly.
Well, I hope people found that interesting.
I certainly did. It was just amazing. And because we spoke such a lot about the dark web and, you know, the drug markets and what happens when you drive people underground so much, and what are they doing to this place in Slovenia but driving it underground? Just because it's invisible doesn't mean it's not there.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's something that we all need to think about really seriously. You drive people underground or you ask them questions you're not prepared to hear the answers to, they'll lie to you.
Yeah.
They'll say, okay, we don't exist.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. But they do. They'll be there. So, come on, just say, you know, big shout out to Juan Okoa and to his colleagues and to the people in Slovenia, and just keep on going there because what your message is really important, what you do is really important.
Exactly.
And keeping people alive, you're probably keeping your future politicians alive, I might add.
No, they're great, great people. I've chatted with Janko on Facebook over the years, so he's a good fellow.
Yeah.
We'll play a quick track and then we'll just conclude this week's show. This is The Doors and End of the Night. The Doors.
Okay.
Summer on to sweet delight. Summer on to this.
that was The Doors and End of the Night. We'll just try and do a little bit of a story from Canada.
There's a last article that we've got that we'd like to do. Anyway, it's "Man, I've Seen a Lot of People Die." It's a quote, "Canada's Other Health Crisis" by Avery Haines, CTV News, CA. That's Calgary, I assume. Or Canada, January the 30th. Toronto. Dr. Mark Tyndall takes a long pause. He fights for composure as his tired eyes wells up with tears. Quote, "There's a lot of us who feel a bit burnt out about the whole thing." His voice wavers. "So many people have died." He takes another long pause. "Man, I've seen a lot of people die." The infectious diseases doctor with a background in public health is on the front line of a Canadian health crisis. It's the toxic drug supply, an epidemic within the pandemic. Never before in the history of this country have more people died from drug overdoses. It's a health emergency that is being fueled by the pandemic. The very measures that are meant to keep us safe from the virus are unintended consequences on those struggling with addiction and mental illness. Lockdown means isolation, lost jobs, and difficulty accessing services. The shutdown of Canada-US border has disrupted the illegal drug supply, so what's on the street is more contaminated than ever as dealers mix other ingredients to stretch their supply.
What a surprise, Marion.
Yeah.
In the first 9 months of 2020, during the first wave of the pandemic, nearly 1,700 people died from overdoses in Ontario alone. That's a 55% increase over last year. In Alberta, during the same period, more people died from overdose than from COVID. Wow. The overdose epicentre in Canada is British Columbia. There is a poison toxic drug supply out there. They're buying poison on the street, said a vocal advocate for change. He said governments need to act now to create a safe supply of drugs. It won't solve the addiction issue, but he says it will stop people from dying. It's an idea also supported by a national advocacy group called Moms Stop the Harm. Co-founder Leslie McBain, whose 25-year-old son Jordan died from a drug overdose, says in times of crisis, radical action is needed. In the early 1900s, the government prohibited the sale of alcohol. What happened? Toxic alcohol. Killed people, the gangs rolled up. The government said, okay, this just isn't working. Let's regulate it and sell it legally. People still get addicted. People still die, but it's a safe supply.
Indeed. Okay, on average, 5 people die of an overdose every day in British Columbia. On June 16, 2020, Morgan joined that grim tally. The phone call breaking the news is seared into Kathleen's memory. Kathleen's a member of Mums Stop the Harm. I just remember falling to my knees. I just remember screaming, no, no, no. Like many victims of toxic street drugs, Morgan didn't die from taking too many drugs. Kathleen says he died from a small amount of heroin that was laced with fentanyl.
Oh, dear.
Quote, the coroner said that when Morgan took it, he probably passed away within about 30 seconds. It was that toxic. 7 months after losing her eldest son, Kathleen struggles to carry on. Her quote, it feels impossible some days. This is taking the lives of kids like Morgan, and families like ours, supportive, loving families that have done everything to help support their children. That's an end of her quote. Morgan's stepfather, Roy, is a retired police officer who says taking drugs is now a deadly game of chance. His quote, before it was like Russian roulette with one bullet in the chamber, and now it's like Russian roulette with the whole chamber almost loaded.
Wow, that's a pretty...
I'm really glad that article was there, Jeffrey. I just think it rounds out our program this week really well. That's a nice, potent article. And just a reminder, troops, that you can stop overdoses. We don't know if we've got a lot of fentanyl in the local heroin supply, but if we have overdose, we have naloxone.
Mm.
Get in touch with Dave on 62533643, Dave or Damo, 62533643, and register for the overdose intervention program with naloxone, and you can be one of the people that helps to save your friend's life.
Yeah, look, it's information that why wouldn't you want to know?
Yeah, if you can do that, why would you not want it? Even if they drive you crazy at the time because you told them, they can always have more, but you can never have less. You can save their lives, so they're alive to tell them to not be so bloody greedy next time. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, no, look, it only does one thing, naloxone, but it does it.
It does it
exceptionally
well. Yep,
it brings people back from
opioid overdose. And that's what we want. Yeah. You know, we want to keep people alive so that they can at least educate their kids. They can love their kids. They can hug their kids. They can see them grow up. They can become politicians. You can become a politician. Yeah. Or you can become an agent for change. It doesn't matter what you need to do. You can't do it if you're not alive.
You can't change or do anything once
change you're nothing if you're dead, love. Yeah, except exactly. Except the status quo. Like, there's a space where you were.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay, that's it. Thank you, Marion.
Yeah, for thank you, Jeffrey. We'll see you next week,
show.
Listeners.
We'll be
hey,
back. Yep. Yeah. Take care, everyone. Look
yeah,
after
please
yourself
be with us next week. We'd love to see you.
And
hear ya.
Check out the Facebook page. And if you've got any ideas, give Karma a call.
Absolutely. Get in touch with Karma 625-33643 and let us know what you'd like to hear, what kind of songs you'd like to hear, or what you'd like to know about. Whether you like the international stuff, if you like the local stuff, if you've got stuff to say, let us know.
We love feedback.
We'd love to hear about
it. Okay. We will be back at 10:30 next Tuesday. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Texture like sun lays me down. With my mind she runs throughout the night. No need to fight, never a frown. With golden brown, every time, just like the last. On her ship, tied to the mast. Two distant lands, takes both my hands. Never a frown with golden brown. Golden brown, fine temptress. Through the ages she's heading west. From far away, stays for a day. Never a frown.